test an experiment. Test an experiment.
Come on, you tiny little wreck, have a drink. We're drinking to women.
This is ridiculous.
The United States Supreme Court has described it as dirt for dirt's sake.
There's not just like some whiny guy up there crying about how his girlfriend left him. You know, he's going to slit his wrist. It's a rock and roll show. Oh, it's about happiness and all right, maybe this is some not so happy shit.
Drink up, man. We got 2 six-packs to kill.
Sort of like, you know, communal, let's all get together and have a big orgy feeling.
Never in the history of the world have the merchants of obscenity, the teachers of unnatural sex acts, had available to them the modern facilities for disseminating this filth.
Remember what I said. I'm gonna kill you.
Certainly!
Hello and good afternoon. This is Boris. I'm here with Snake Alley at garagepunk.com. You know, some people say that the slicing of flesh is not a thing of beauty. Their minds have been twisted. So pick up your knife, kiddies, and go into your dark, dark bedroom, and I'll be in later to bite your navel.
Beer does taste good, Jeff.
Having some pale ale, aren't we, tonight?
A bit of the bubbly.
All right, welcome to Snake Alley. Episode 9. Thought you'd never it would never happen, did ya? And we just heard... Let's see what we heard. Actually, right now we're listening to The Vamp Camp by Knuckle Dragger. Before that, we heard... Let's see what we heard here. Werewolf from Outer Space by the Neanderthals from their album The Last Menace to the Human Race. Man, that's pretty scary. And that selection comes compliments of our guest musical director tonight, Ryan Catastrophe of the podcast One Cup of Coffee. and a cigarette. How you doing there, Ryan?
Hey, Bob, Jeff. Thanks for having me on Snake Alley. And like you said, I'll be playing a couple of songs sporadically for all you people out there. But in the meantime, I'm going to help myself to one of these beers, if you guys don't mind.
Well, thanks, Ryan, for coming on program and spinning some sporadic tunes for us related to what we're looking at this week. And as usual, I'm joined by, not my guest, but now he's officially the co-host of Snake Alley. Congratulations, Jeff.
Thank you, Bob Noxious.
All right. And I'm officially Bob Noxious. Anyway, we also have a resident. Well, she comes on once in a while, and she's our alien expert and sci-fi genius.
And very, very easy on the eyes.
Yeah, the very lovely Miss Pamela Rogers.
Thank you.
How you doing, Pam?
I'm doing great. Thanks.
All right. You're looking forward to sitting in with us?
Absolutely.
You're not scared?
Not scared at all.
But you said that one of these movies did scare you.
It kind of scared me, yeah.
Okay, well, we'll get into that later. You can explain that. And okay. Anyway, let's go ahead and peek into our movie selections here for this episode. First up is Peter Graves in Killers from Space. This is 1954. And the reason I remember 1954 is because he made 54 episodes of Mission Impossible.
I believe you're right, Bob.
He sure did. He had three of them, and then he came on permanently and was there for like seven seasons.
I'm trying to remember. I think his actual debut was the part of the German counterfeit agent in Stalag 17.
Man, he played. That was one of my favorites. I'm glad he brought that up.
He was
excellent. Otto Preminger in that.
Yeah.
And, boy, he was the snitch.
Yeah.
He was the snitch in the camp, and he got what was coming to him.
That's right.
Then again, I remember him from in early morning, 6 o'clock every morning.
Oh, yeah.
Fury.
Never missed it.
And he played Jim Newton.
Jim, yeah.
And
I was co-star to the young boy, I believe it was Bobby Diamond.
It was definitely Bobby Diamond. And probably his best and only role. He still goes an Ofer every once in a while.
I think he did
with the kid that played Dennis the Menace.
Right, Jay North. Yeah.
Yeah, Jay North. And they always get to get, like three of them get together and appear on some sappy afternoon talk show.
I do believe Bobby Diamond also had a co-starring role on the TV adaption with Sammy Jackson on No Time for Sergeants.
All right, man. And then, well, Jim Graves, he's been singing for his supper for 55 years. Actually, I looked into it and researched it. He's been on television as long as television's been around, basically.
Mm-hmm.
He had 7 years on the Schlitz Playhouse Theater. Is that great?
I believe it.
It's like, you got to drink Schlitz to like this one. And I'm talking too much. But he also appeared in, this one's Killers from Space. And he was also in a couple other movies comparative to this. It Conquered the World, where they got the giant ice cream cone with the fangs hanging out of it.
Oh, and also the Bird Eye Gordon classic with the giant grasshoppers, the beginning of the end.
All right. And he was on Red Planet Mars, which I haven't seen. I want to get a copy of that. But let's go ahead and move on and tell me something about this flick, Jeff. You just watched it, right?
Well, I've watched it three times since we did our last show. And it brought back really, what's the best word for it, unbelievable memories from my younger days when I watched it as a young boy. Back then, I thought it was just fantastic. And now, reviewing it again at my current age, I see it, even though it is a B-movie, it was very, they tried to do as much as possible within budget limitations.
A lot of stock footage. Low production
values. I mean, these guys, the editors and whoever put this film together, did not even try to match or make the documentary military footage look like it could be intercut with the shots of the exterior of the jet and close-ups with Peter Graves.
Kind of like when you throw cheese on top of a wall.
That's right.
A sandwich, it doesn't, one's round, one's square, and it just doesn't.
Unless you're eating a poor boy.
1954's Killers from Space.
Dr. Martin, I didn't expect you back so soon.
Haven't you heard?
I'm a metal case. Can't even be trusted with my own work.
Ah! I'll have to go berserk at any minute. Colonel Banks will fill you in on the details.
It's all right, Dr. Martin. You're with friends. You'll be all right.
Now, let me go. Let me go.
Steady now. Steady, Doc.
He'll kill everyone. We've got to stop them.
Easy, Doug. Easy.
Dr. Martin, I see you are quite well. You have recovered from your unfortunate accident.
Who are you?
A scientist, like yourself.
Where do you come from?
From a planet, yet unknown to you.
You know my name. You speak English.
We speak every language.
Can't expect me to believe that. I'm getting out of here.
Stay where you are.
Who are you?
I have already told you that.
How did you get here?
Here. In our machines, magnetically propelled across the electron bridge we have created.
Electron bridge? You mean you come and go, just like that? Without anyone ever seeing you?
Our ships have been sighted on numerous occasions by your people.
Then why haven't we been able to track one down?
We have a warning system similar to your primitive radar. Our machines are set to change course at the mere approach of a pursuing object.
Let's say I do believe you. Where are we right now?
In a cavern within the upper crust of the Earth.
How long have you been here?
Since the beginning of your experiments in nuclear fission.
What have you got to do with that?
We are accumulating the energy released with each of your atomic explosions. Yours is the only planet in this solar system capable of supporting our civilization.
This is fantastic. Over a billion of you trying to come here to Earth.
We have no alternative. We have been putting our plan to work for some time. At the proper moment, the invasion will be launched from our platforms, which are being readied in space. Nothing can stop us.
This is ridiculous. It's horrible. What are you doing here?
We are breeding our, shall I say, armies.
Those carnivorous insects and animals? Look at them.
Their growth is due to a change in their genes. With your next nuclear test, these animals will multiply at a rate beyond imagination. Time comes, we will unleash them.
Even though there's some very low production values in this movie, it's pretty convincing. And here to tell us all about these aliens is our resident alien and sci-fi expert, Pam Rogers. What'd you think about it, Pam?
What can I say about them? They have fake eyes, obviously, and a lot of them don't talk. It's just, a lot of them don't say anything. There's only one guy, actually, that talks, and he appears to be the leader. So we don't know if the other ones are robots or what, but they all kind of have this crash dummy look. And
like the crash dummies that used to be on TV?
Exactly.
Like Vince and Larry.
Exactly. They almost look like robots or something. And
what about those eyeballs?
Those eyeballs are fake, you can tell. They're
no,
they're big and buggy, and they I think they did that for a reason, because they were trying to create this sense that they were trying to hypnotize the our hero. And
you always see the flashbacks.
Yeah, you see that
and
kind of
thing. And
you
keep seeing the eyeballs in the flashbacks.
Right. And there is an interesting point, and I think Pam may have hit upon this. The makeup man for this movie, Killers from Space, was Harry Thomas, who was a B-movie makeup man, most notably from Robert L. Lippert's Superman and the Mole Men.
And he had a lot of leftover, like, ping pong balls.
Right.
And he went to work on these guys.
Oh, yeah.
And they had the belts that looked like safety tape.
Right.
Like, you know, hazard tape, you know, that they put, you know, where you, they don't want you to run off the road. So they remind me kind of like Bougie Boy in the early Devo videos.
I'll tell
videos.
You, the actual suits they wore reminded me a little bit of the Martian suits they used in Invaders from Mars 2 years yeah. earlier.
They're wetsuits.
Yeah.
They're diving suits, you know, scuba diving.
Yeah.
Skin. And so Pam had some more to add about this movie because she spent a lot of time watching. She was like, you weren't scared with this one. You were scared more of the other one. But.
No. I'd seen this one before, and actually I remembered it after I saw it a second time. I thought, oh, okay, yeah, that's that one with the giant tarantulas.
Yeah, the mutated insects.
They're trying to take over our world and create these giant bugs and tarantulas and things to eat us so that we'll...
Oh, and case in point.
Yeah, that's where we get to.
A lot of cheap rear projection work. And yeah. I mean, not too bad on the
you let him right into it on
of
this.
The aircraft when Peter Graves was nosediving, but also with the giant insects, the Gila monster, the horny toad, and all this. You could tell when they were going to show a giant insect or lizard because... There would Peter Graves be in just a black background, then just all of a sudden, there was the giant insects.
Yeah, I love it, man. I know, I loved it. This one is available up there in archive.org. It's one of the first ones they put up there. Not the first. And it's a really horrible print, but it only makes the experience so much better.
Oh, and I might add this. The actor who plays the Air Force Colonel in this is James Shea, who actually went on to be the top first technician in Irwin Allen's The Time Tunnel.
Wow. Yeah, well, there's a lot of connections there.
Sure.
So anyway, like I say, that one is Peter Graves in Killers from Outer Space.
Oh, and by the way...
You want to say something else about Peter Graves, I'm sure.
Well, he smoked a pipe in this, but if you notice from the movie, they're lighting up one right after another cigarettes. You would swear they're getting a kickback from Philip Morris.
So make sure to go ahead and log on to archive.org, navigate to the feature films area, and have fun. Download them, watch them on your computer. Download them to DVD or burn them to DVD if you want. And whatever. Anyway, I think it's time for a little musical break. I'm out of breath here. And so, Ryan, what do you got for us?
From outer space. Look out! Don't shout. I could tell at a glance it was the creature from outer space. So if you ever see don't shriek and hide your face. He's a friendly man, that creature from outer space.
All right, that was Sunny Day with Creature from Outer Space. Thanks, Ryan, for that great musical selection. Anyway, we're going to move right along to our next feature film. And this is also available on archive.org. It's an excellent print, except that it's the cut version, but there's a lot of cut versions. And the reason is this thing has a copyright date of 1962, but it was done, like, it was wrapped up in 1959. It had a hard time getting past the censors. At this point, I can't understand it, but anyway, the British Film Commission also nixed it and never did give it a rating, and to this day still never give it a rating. And this is from 1962. That's the date, anyway. The Brain That Wouldn't Die. Jeff, I've seen a lot of movies that have, like, two or three different titles to them.
Well, I have two.
But never on one print.
No.
On the intro title, you see The Brain That Wouldn't Die. And at the end, they call it The Head That Wouldn't Die on the same damn print.
That is correct.
All right. And this guy only directed like three or four movies. And yeah. I don't mean to hog the floor here because I'm sure you got a lot to say about it.
Well, actually, the star of it, as he's listed, Herb Evers, changed his name, like I believe by the early 60s, to Jason Evers. Now, Jason Evers went on to make guest shots in television and also co-starred with Walter Brennan and Dak Rambo in The Guns of Wild Sound in 1966.
All right. And really, almost everybody in this movie only appeared in two or three movies throughout their lifetime. And there is the guy that plays the monster. He's called the Jewish Giant. And you know, Jeff, probably back in, man, 61 to 68, this guy toured with Ringling Brothers.
Yes,
Barnum and Bailey.
About this the other day.
Yep, and we probably saw him in real life.
I can remember the first time I actually saw him was in a color photograph standing beside a regular woman, and he towered over her by an easy 2 feet.
He was 7'9".
Yeah.
That was his recorded height, and then he developed scoliosis and curvature of the spine, and he ended up just, you know, being 7 feet. Not so, but anyway, he plays the monster, and we're going to go ahead and take a little bit of look at it. And Jeff and Pam are going to give us some very accurate expert analysts here on this monster and the movie here, The Brain That Wouldn't Die, from 1962.
With my new special compound I've created, I'll do it. I know I can do it.
Sure, sure, that's what you say.
That's what I know. I know I'm close.
Bill, the line between scientific genius and obsessive fanaticism is a thin one. I want you on the right side of it.
If I don't experiment, how can I hope to perform operations like the one you almost messed up?
But I can't cover up for you anymore. The superintendent had it out with me. He thinks it's you who's been stealing those limbs from the amputee operations.
So what if it is?
What's happened to you?
It's been a terrible accident. I've got to save her. I've got to save her.
What is it? What have you got there?
Kirk, please. Sterilize the tubes and instruments quickly.
Well, what are you going to do? Aren't you going to have a look in the closet first?
No, I can't now. This is more important.
But you don't understand.
For God's sake, Kirk, this is urgent. Do as I tell you before it's too late. I can't waste precious time arguing with you.
My eyes are deceiving me.
What you see is real. What's done is done, and what I've done is right. It's the work of science.
I've had success with transplants. Now I can do it for her.
She'll live, and I'll get her another body. I can make her complete again.
Only a madman can believe that she could ever be like before.
Don't argue with me.
With her, I'm using my new adreno serum. Must work. I've got to go now. If the police,
or anyone call. Tell them you don't know anything about it. I don't think anyone will trace us here because her body was burned in the wreckage.
Yes, yes, of course, of course. Look, Bill, before you go, do have a look in that closet. It's the reason why I called you up here.
Keep it locked.
Last night it got so violent it almost broke out.
Oh. Oh, not through that thickness. Keep it closed.
Together we're both more than things. We're a power as hideous as our deformities. Together we'll wreak our revenge. I shall create power, and you will enforce it. What's locked behind that door?
Horror. No normal mind can imagine. Something even more terrible than you.
No, my deformed friend. Like all quantities, horror has its ultimate. And I'm that.
No. There is a horror beyond yours. And it's in there. Locked behind that door. The paths of experimentation twist and turn through mountains of miscalculation and often lose themselves in error and darkness. Behind that door is the sum total of Dr. Courtney's mistakes.
Whoever, whatever you are, I command you. You understand me. I'm only a head, and you're whatever you are. Together we're strong, more powerful than any of them.
Well, it's mutated some, of course. It's changed considerably.
Why don't you open the door? And we'll both see how it's changed.
Listen, you, I warn you. You better stop pestering me, do you hear? I'm getting fed up with you and your insidious talk. He should have cut out your tongue while he was at it.
Afraid?
Afraid of whom? Of you? No, not anymore.
But of it.
Nor of it. He only keeps it locked in there so that it'll be safe, that's all.
Safe? From me?
You beast. I hope he prolongs your existence into a lifetime of agony. Then we'll see who's laughing at whom. You miserable fool!
Get him!
Not bad, not bad at all. You got some pretty good music going on there. Some pretty clean effects. You know, scary monster in the closet. A lot of tension going on there. Pam, why don't I hand it off to you and tell us what you think about this flick. It scared you, right?
Yeah, it really did. I mean, when you think about, how close we are to actually doing some of these sophisticated type of transplants these days, parts of hearts and things like that. I mean, it's kind of scary. It actually is real. And that's what's, I think, the scariest about this is that it comes so close to reality.
So we're not too far away from somebody putting together a human out of spare parts.
It doesn't seem like it when you think about, what they can actually do these days.
Yeah, and I think that probably some crazy hot rodder. You know, these guys that put together Harley Davidson's probably in particular. These bikers that keep their bike transmissions in the bathtub and stuff would probably, you know, if they went to medical school. Ed, shut up!
Makes you think about the mad scientist, really does.
Yeah, so it's a mad scientist movie. And Jeff's going to go ahead and take over and tell us a little bit more about the plot.
As a matter of fact, I can remember because we used to get the Western Catholic delivered to us every Saturday. And as a matter of fact, I can remember The Brain That Wouldn't Die was listed on the condemned list. And I, naturally, I was only like about 9 or 10 years old at the time when the movie came out. And as I got older, naturally in the late 60s, it came on television. And I'll tell you, it was risque considering when it was made, especially when you consider the softcore nudity that was in the film.
What softcore nudity?
Well, the burlesque.
It wasn't anything. You didn't even see a bare shoulder.
Oh, yeah, the burlesque.
Sure you did, the burlesque.
Okay. You actually see the moderator, the MC, actually say that he has 5 contestants coming out, and actually 4 only come out.
That's right.
And so what? The mad doctor is there to pick bodies for what?
Well, actually, to take the most statuesque bodied woman and transplant the body on his dead fiancée's head.
Okay.
Now, the thing is, in the sequence before she became dismembered, when she came out of the operating room, she was as tall as Jason Evers. And the other nurse came out a few moments later, and she was at least 6 or 7 inches shorter than Jason Evers, which leads us to the conclusion that this...
Wow, what the hell happened there?
Man.
My ears are ringing. Like Pete Townsend would say, talk, talking about my tinnitus. Anyway,
I will say
I'm
this.
I'm trying to be funny here, but let's get back to the show here, man. I don't know what happened there, man. The dog went crazy, and I don't know. I guess he took a whiz on the new Mac Mini. I don't know.
I will say this. When Jason Evers starts roaming from exotic dancing hall to the next, they feature some very well-rounded bottom lunches.
Is that all you're thinking about, man? I'm thinking about the mad scientist, and you're thinking about the burlesque there. So.
If you saw Jason Evers' reactions when these gals...
Well, sure, were, man.
Oh, it was great.
They're melodrama. This is a melodrama.
Well, I think.
Like most of these cheesy flicks we look at.
Yeah, it was a taste of the old-style burlesque. Now, when he met up with the actual model that he picked for the transplant, that was pretty well handled.
Yep, and I just want to remind you, this thing is up on archive.org, cha-ching, whatever. Anyway, I want to express that this is the cut version. It's very much cut, and there's a sequence when it's getting very exciting, when the monster in the closet grabs the mad doctor's assistant who has the limp arm. You know, he's got the gimp guy that he's trying to save through these transplants, but you know, they're more successful now than ever. Like they say, science fiction is fact or whatever, you know. But when you're looking at this, the guy gets his arm ripped off and you see blood all over the place later on in the flick, and you wonder what happened. Well, what happened was that was cut out of the movie. And this poor director only made 3 movies in his whole directing career, and the only thing other to his credit is that he did get like co-credits for writing a novel in the 70s. That's about it. Horrible, I don't even know his name. That's how bad he is.
Now, I will say this about the makeup of the monster in the closet. They did try to do what was allowed under the very strenuous restrictions of the budget. But the thing was that I'll be quite honest with you, most of the makeup effects in this movie, primarily with the monster, were threadbare.
Well, they fell off after about 2 minutes into the flick.
I mean,
into the scenes.
Yeah,
and when they're fighting, you can see that the back of this mask has fallen off a couple times.
Right,
and you can see in the front that it's fallen off other ways. He's, you know,
you can tell the deformed eyes.
It's threadbare.
A ping pong.
But the weird thing about it is, and with a lot of the movies that we look at, and I don't mean ran on, but, you know, we look at Corman, and he's popular, and he's because he made so many movies.
Well, see,
but then you look at movies like this.
Yeah.
To where somebody made one or two movies, and these people are long gone and dead, and their family probably,
sure,
you know, are ashamed of something like this. But we're looking at this guy, we're talking about him, and probably nobody in the whole world is talking about him and or thinking about him until we remind him. So, you know, anybody wants to come and sue us...
That's right.
If anybody wants to come and sue us, just think about what we're doing. We're bringing back... we're not trashing them.
I will say this. Jason Evers, aka Herb Evers, did a pretty good job in the leading role under... Like I said, the restrictions in the budget.
And again, I tell you what, you can download it from archive.org, which is the cut version, which is 11 minutes short of the 82 minutes that is the original version. If you really want to see a guy running around with his arm cut off, and I don't know what else might be in there, you know, that got cut out of there, but it's well worth checking out. You know, it's from 1962, actually 1959, but they let it out in 1962. I'm sure it was in every drive-in. The brain that wouldn't die, and at the end, it's the head that wouldn't die.
And if nothing else, remember, see it because it was condemned by the Catholic Church.
Big time, eh? All right.
There you go.
So anyway, it's come this time. Jeff's got to leave. We're going to hang around a little bit. And
again,
Ryan,
Bob Noxious, I had a wonderful time working on the new show with both you and Pam. And I can only say in passing that each show is akin to that of a cool spring breeze.
Who in the hell said that?
I did.
All right. All right, well, and as Oscar Wilde said... Fuck you. I'm getting the hell out of here. All right. See you, Jeff. Thanks for stopping in.
No problem.
Bye, Jeff.
All right. Hey folks, thanks for listening to Snake Alley here on GaragePunk.com radio. And special thanks to the lovely and talented Pam Rogers for joining us as our alien expert. And of course, Ryan Catastrophe, our guest musical director of One Cup of Coffee and a Cigarette podcast on GaragePunk.com. He brought some great music to our show. Ryan, you going to stick around and have a couple more beers, or what do you got in mind, man?
Yeah, it's been a real pleasure. We'll have to do it again sometime soon. But as for right now, I gotta get out of here. So I'll see you guys later.
Oh, the mice that made us a man. This is ridiculous.
Why don't you go on and use it? Get it over with. Use it. Get it over with.